All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season, when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com. You know, most hunters don't think about their food plots until it's time to throw down some seed for the fall. And if that's the case, you might be leaving a lot on the table. If you want deer using your plots when season opens, you need to give them a reason to be there all summer long. That's how you build movement patterns. Not hoping for them in October, establish them in June. On top of that, bucks are growing antlers right now, does are about to be nursing fawns, and your plots can be a real herd health tool during the summer months, not just a hunting tool come fall. Whitetail Hill has a warm season lineup built exactly for this. Summer Bulk is their big warm season forage blend. It grows 4 to 5 feet tall, holds up to browsing pressure way better than something like soybeans, and it'll carry all the way to the first frost. So it doubles down as an early season food plot for us down here in the south. Then if your soil needs a little bit of work first, check out Dirt Doctor. It builds topsoil, breaks up compaction, and gets your plots in shape for a great fall planting. So check out Summer Bulk and Dirt Doctor at whitetailhill.com. Again, that's whitetailhill.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Starting off with another great listener success story today, this time from good old South Georgia with our listener, Mr. Tate Kite. Man, I almost just screwed up your last name again. I asked you right before we started and I almost screwed it up. Tate, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. I'm glad y'all asked me to come on here. We can talk about this buck.
Yeah, so I go through the listener success stories and I schedule them to post on Facebook, and man, yeah, I came across yours and I was like, whoa, especially being from Georgia. We're going to throw a picture of it on the screen. Me and Jacob are actually looking at it on the TV up here. Dude, you just killed a gigantic deer, giant deer in South Georgia. So to kick us off, just tell us, like, you know, where you're from, you know, what part of the country, and a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm from South Georgia, around kind of in between Valdosta and Waycross area, real south, real far south, like 30 minutes from Florida. But I grew up hunting around this area right here, and it's pretty known for small bucks. But we've been hunting in Southwest Georgia for about 15 or so years now, and there's some really good bucks to be had over there. And that's kind of where I cut my teeth hunting, over there on our lease growing up. And then I went to school to play baseball. So I moved off after high school, and it wasn't really an option to go back and forth to the lease. It didn't really make a whole lot of sense. So that's whenever I started looking into public land. And I had no idea that public land was even a thing whenever I was in school. But I started looking into it, and that's actually how I found out about the Southern Outdoorsman. I was just looking for anything on the internet, YouTube, podcasts, anything talking about public land hunting. And that's where I come across the Southern Outdoorsman. And that was probably in 2019, I guess it was. And I've been listening probably every week since then.
Sweet, dude. Well,
man, he just took your next question.
I mean, yeah, he kind of took that. So, well, you actually took both questions, not only how long you've been listening, but also how you found out about the podcast, kind of searching for it. So I appreciate you kind of jumping to it. So, again, we're kind of looking at this deer right now. I'll be honest, like, it's kind of distracting. Andrew, you should have just, like, took it off.
Honestly,
the
he is, because I didn't realize this till we were just talking, and I put it up on the screen, but his main beams cross each other.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, deer is insane. So we're going to talk about this deer a little bit, and, of course, you know, things that maybe you've learned from the podcast the last, you know, 5+ years listening. But I'm really curious, especially, like, with your lease y'all've got in Southwest Georgia. Can you run us through, like, what's the habitat like? How big's the property? How does the property kind of set up to hunt and so on?
It's about 200 acres or so, about like anywhere in Middle Georgia, Southwest Georgia. It's a lot of ag fields, cropland type deal. It's the only woods on it is the creek bottoms that run through, kind of connecting the fields. And the way the property sets up, it's kind of got a field, and it's got four fields and then the creek bottoms that run through and kind of connect in the middle, where it almost makes a hub in the center of the property. And it sets up pretty nice. That's actually where I killed that buck, in that hub in the center.
Okay, sweet. Awesome. Well, to kind of get into it, let's I want to jump into the story of the buck first off, and then we'll kind of hash out some of the things that you've kind of maybe learned, you know, from the podcast that has been, you know, impactful for you. So kind of getting into the story of this deer, Tate, again, you're talking about the property, and again, you know, a lot of ag, again, that you find. It's kind of interesting, you know, as you get further south in Georgia, same thing in Alabama, especially like southeast Alabama, there's a little bit more agriculture, actually a lot bit more agriculture, which is something that we don't always relate with a whole bunch, just because the part of the state that we hunt in, and when we travel across the south, unless we go to like Arkansas, like, we just don't have a whole bunch of ag around. But you guys have been hunting at 200 acres for a while now, like you had mentioned. Walk us through the hunt. Like, first off, did you know anything about this deer previously? You know, how did you come about finding about this deer? Then how do the actual hunts take place in order for you to be able to, you know, get a shot opportunity at this deer?
I found out about that deer. So I killed him in December. I found out about him the June before, so the summer before season come in. It's me, my daddy, and another guy that hunt these 200 acres. And the other guy, he come over to my house one day, and he was showing me pictures. And this deer showed up on camera like in January. He didn't say anything about it during season, but he showed it to me during the summer. And you can tell, I had to send y'all a picture. You can definitely tell it's the same deer, main beams cross. He's got the kickers on his G2s. He was probably I don't know, ballpark, like mid-140s. He definitely blew up over the summer, but that was whenever I found out about him over the summer. And then we set out – I normally run cameras at start running them at the end of July, just trying to get an idea of what's in the area. And he didn't show up on camera till probably the beginning of November. And, you know, being that that guy got him on camera the year before, he didn't show up till January. I wasn't so sure that he was living on the property anyway, because our rut over there is kind of like an Alabama rut. It normally starts kicking off maybe around the last week of November, but it normally December 1st, I'm over there in the tree. The whole month of December is normally on fire. But anyway, he showed back up on camera sometime around November, and I was flicking through my cell cam pictures, and there's a picture of him, and I said, oh my gosh, that was by far the biggest buck we've had on camera over there.
So, and then let me cut you. I want to cut in real quick. You were talking about like this property, 200 acres. It's a lot. It's ag. You know, you got two big fields on it, and it's like all the drainage is kind of where the cover's at. If you had to talk about percentages, okay, how much of the percent of this property, this 200 acres, is actually what you would classify as somewhat of some kind of cover outside of crop fields?
Some kind of – it's probably close to 50-50. Ballpark, yeah, probably 50-50 or so.
How many guys are in this lease?
Three.
Okay, cool. Man, so it's about roughly 100 acres you guys are, you know, kind of diving in on. So that's something that when we bring this up, you know, guys are hunting, you know, like leases like this or family farms that, you know, under like 400 or 500 acres. We start talking situations like that. Three guys on 100 acres, that's a decent amount of pressure for sure, no doubt, especially yeah. Depending on how everybody's hunting it and everything. So, you know, you're kind of dealing with all that and all the situations. Now, let me ask on the surrounding areas of this farm. Is it kind of similar, like, again, little wood blocks and, like, just drainages running through it? Or is there, like, bigger blocks of timber or some kind of cover type out there?
Yeah, everything's pretty much the same, but there's actually about a 600 to 800-acre block south of us across from the highway. And it's probably the biggest chunk of woods for 30 miles around. And a lot of – it's kind of like quail plantation woods where they, you know, they burn it every couple of years. And a lot of the bucks that we kill later in the rut, we don't have pictures of. On their horns, you can see the black char from the trees that they're rubbing. So we know they're coming from across wherever they're doing that quail hunting at.
Oh,
that's freaking cool.
That's pretty cool.
That is super cool.
So going back again, the habitat's pretty interesting. Now, of the what I would call cover on this property, again, everything outside of the ag fields. What is the wood setup on this place? I mean, in the photo right here, I don't know exactly where this photo was taken on the property, but it looks fairly thick behind it, like in smaller saplings and smaller diameter trees in there, like higher stem count, like when it comes to like branches interwoven. How does a lot of that cover kind of lay out on that property?
Yeah, so in that picture right there, that's actually where he died. He died about 30 yards inside the field edge, so it's kind of thicker. There's more sunlight getting in. But the creek bottoms are about what you would expect on any kind of creek in the southeast. It's kind of thick, but you got, you know, mature trees every now and then. And then there's actually there's two pine stands. One's kind of on the northern side and one's on the eastern side. And those pine trees, they're 20 plus years old, and one of them is real choked out. Like, I would believe a deer would have a hard time, you know, running through it or even bedding in it. But the other one, it plays out pretty nice to where I actually walk around the edges of it late mornings, most of the time banging some antlers together, because I know the deer hold up in those pine trees, and it's kind of in between two ag fields.
Okay, very cool. So kind of getting back to the hunt, again, the buck kind of showed up in November and you started hunting it. Was he like fairly frequently, you know, on camera, or was it just like once or twice and then you kind of went in there after him? Like, how often did you have tabs on this deer?
We only had three pictures of him, and it was like 3 days apart. And I remember the first time it was like 11 p.m. Next time it was 1 a.m. Next time it was 12. So putting that together with from the season before, whenever the other guy got him on camera in January, I was I was pretty certain the deer wasn't living on the property. But then again, we only have two or three cameras out, so we're not really like covering the whole 200 acres. You don't really know. But I just know where I had the camera at, he was more than likely not living within close proximity to that area.
What were y'all running your cameras on, out of curiosity?
We were running them on gravity feeders.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We had them on gravity feeders on the corners of the fields. So the people we leased that land from, they lease it out to farmers, and they normally rotate cotton peanuts, but for whatever reason, they planted cotton the last 3 years in a row. And you can definitely tell the difference in the deer numbers on peanut years versus cotton years, but you just kind of, you got to play the hand you're dealt.
Yeah, man, I've always wondered about that with cotton, because we got cotton fields around our house, and I never ever see deer in those cotton fields, man.
Yeah. There's actually a hunt camp a little down the road for a group of guys from Florida. And we rode up there one day, just kind of talked to them and kind of see what they're shooting and kind of hanging out. And they told us that, they said, yeah, man, I love hunting a cotton field on a cold January day. He said, them big bucks just go out there and eat that cotton and it makes them warm inside. I said, we're all right. We don't have to worry about these guys.
That's fantastic.
So I've actually seen bucks in Tennessee feed on cotton when it's still green before it turns into like July, August time frame. But it's like, it's not like a high, you know, quality food. I mean, it's not definitely highly sought after. Now, peanuts, explain peanuts, because we've interviewed a couple guys from like South Alabama, and they hunt peanut farms, and they're like, dude, it's insane. So explain on peanut years, how are deer feeding on peanuts, especially, I guess, like the nut itself, the tubular or the root system and everything? Are they digging it up? Are they eating like the top of the plants? Like what's it like when they're on peanuts?
From my understanding is they will browse a little bit on it whenever it's still green. And as you know, the peanuts grow underground, kind of like a potato. And they'll browse on the tops, but whenever they get ready to pick those peanuts, I'm not sure what the machine is called. It's kind of like a combine or something that goes and flips the peanuts, and then they let it dry out. And once they flip them and when they pick them, I guess there's so many getting busted up, and the actual nut is coming out here and there. And then in the evenings, the deer will just flood into the fields.
Dude.
Interesting. Deep South ag technique right there.
Yeah, peanut fields, baby.
So so one other thing before we're going to keep going, working our way through the story with this deer, which, by the way, for the listeners and for the viewers, tape, what did this deer official, or what did this deer score when y'all put a tape to him, by the way?
We put a tape on him. He was 161.
Okay. Yeah.
He's a mainframe 8, but he's got 15 scoreables.
He's insane. So, again, you've been listening to the podcast for so long. What kind of specific, maybe not, unless you know specific guests, if you know of a specific guest that has been impactful for you, feel free to mention them. But like, what specific topics on the podcast have really like been impactful for you? Or maybe like some of your hunting styles and kind of some stuff you've been doing, even also with this deer.
I would say that one guy that's probably influenced me the most is whenever y'all had Tim Knight on, and he was talking about calling. He was talking about whenever you go turkey hunting, if you left your call at the house, you would go back to the house. Like, you would not even go hunting. And that's probably what's changed in the last 2 or 3 years is whenever it's from pre-rut to whenever season goes out, I'm always going to have my horns with me, and I'm always going to – I normally don't take a grunt, but I always have my horns with me. And that's probably what I've implemented the most. And now I'm just like I would not, whenever it's that time of year, I will not go to the woods without my rattling antlers.
Okay. Let me ask you, did that play a part at all with this deer?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's get back to the meat and potatoes of this episode. So kind of walk us through. Again, y'all had this buck on camera 3 times, and that was it. And again, it was always at, you know, different times. It sounded like mostly at night with that deer. So what was like your thought process in hunting him? How did you set up? Kind of walk us through, you know, some of the hunts that led up to you actually being able to kill that deer.
I was actually hunting. We only got 3 pictures of deer. So we had that all the time with big bucks coming through, and they're here one day, gone the next, never see them again. But the season before, I had a really, I mean, just a picture perfect, beautiful 8-point. And he was there from July until I pulled my cameras out. So I knew he lived in the area. And that was the deer I was kind of hunting. Even though I didn't get a picture of him, I had a good feeling he was still in the area. But anyway, we went over there. Whenever you was talking about pressure, three guys on 200 acres, we kind of – it's kind of like an unwritten rule. We don't go over there until it's game time. You know, the rut's kicking off. We normally start hunting over there last week of or around Thanksgiving, and then we'll hunt it throughout the season. But it got around to I killed him on December 11th. I think that was a Monday. We went Sunday after church. We drove over there. We saw that there was a big, nasty storm front coming through. It was going to be spitting rain. And then on Monday, it was going to be spitting rain all day Sunday, all night. And then it was going to stop on Monday. And then a cold front was going to come in. It was going to be like low 30s, highs in the mid 50s for like the rest of the week. So we took a couple of days off work and headed over there. And got there Sunday, a little after lunch, and we went and hunted Sunday evening. And it was spitting rain. It was nasty, like 30-mile-an-hour winds. And then I knew the rain was gonna and the nasty weather was gonna roll on through till the next morning. But it was gonna stop. I saw where it was gonna stop at exactly like lunchtime, 12 o'clock. And it just so happened that the wind was going to die down. The rain was going to go away. And I can't remember if the moon was going to be directly overhead or directly underfoot at the same time that that weather was going to get out there. So I kind of saw it just like all the stars were aligning. And like I know how a deer, once a big nasty front comes through, to get on their feet and get around. So my game plan for Monday morning was to go sit on this road that connected two fields. I got a ladder stand on this road, and there's a bedding area on both sides, and you catch a bunch of you better have your hand on your rifle right there, because the deer are just gonna be slipping back and forth across that road. But I was gonna go there right at daylight. It was still gonna be nasty weather, but my game plan was to hunt there for like an hour and a half right at daylight, get down, go grab something to eat, and then go hop right back in a different stand that I got where I end up killing the deer. And so the backstory on this, the stand I'm going to go to is it's a saddle that I got set up in this creek bottom in between two fields. But in 2019, I forgot which hurricane it was that came up through the Gulf. And the creek goes right down the middle of the woods in between this field. And this hurricane knocked over tons of huge, like 100-year-old oak trees on one side of the creek. But on the other side, it's just like normal. And it knocked you got so many trees laying over horizontal, and it's almost impossible for a deer to walk through on that side of the creek. So it really pinches them down to like 70 yards in between this field edge and the creek. And that's why I hung that stand there. And so that was my game plan, to go sit in the ladder stand in the morning, get down, and then hopefully be in that stand whenever I was going to get up in there probably an hour before the weather got out there. And I was going to sit the rest of the day. So I seen a bunch of deer that morning, got down, went and grabbed me something to eat. And I told the other two guys, my dad and the other guy that hunts there, I told them I'm about to go hop back in the stand. And they're sitting up at the camper cooking breakfast and whatnot. And I go hop back in the stand at probably about 10 o'clock. And I walk down this field edge to go towards the stand. And right whenever I enter the woods, I'm just going to rattle my way going to the stand, stop about every 100 yards. And I actually rattled up an 8-point on the way in there. He come in there, checked it out, didn't see much, and eased off. And I got up in the stand. And it's still ripping wind. It's like 20, 25 mile an hour gusts. Then a doe comes creeping through. I'm watching her, and she starts blowing out of nowhere and like losing her mind. I know she hasn't seen me, smelled me. She bounces off. And it's the first time I ever seen it. A bobcat comes by with two kittens. I mean, it looks like house cats comes by and just slips on through. And then probably around, it was right at 12 o'clock, just like the forecast said, the wind died down out of nowhere. The rain went away and it's peak game activity time. And my game plan was to wait till the wind died down. And I'm going to bang these antlers probably every 15, 20 minutes and just kind of see where it goes. So right whenever the wind dies down, I bang my antlers and I hang them back on a tree. And I got my – oh, hold on, let me – before I get too far ahead of myself. I got the saddle in the tree and I got my back to the field. The field's probably 15 yards behind me and I'm looking towards the creek. And – I bang the antlers together, hang them back on the tree. And normally I grab my rifle right after I bang my antlers, but for whatever reason I didn't. Bang my antlers, rifle's hanging off to my right, and I look around probably 2 or 3 minutes, don't hear anything. Check to see what time it is, slide my phone back in my pocket, and I look over to my left, and I just see him 50 yards coming. And the weed, because it was raining all day and all night, the leaves are wet. I can't hear him. So I just look over to my left and I see him running towards me. And I don't, there's no leaves on the trees this time of year. So I don't move a muscle. He's probably at my 7 o'clock probably. I'm just looking over my shoulder at him. And he comes to 5 steps from the tree and just stops. And I can hear him breathing. And he's looking around. He come 5 steps from the tree, just looking around, and I'm just sitting there. I'm handcuffed. My gun's still hanging in the tree. He's right under me. He looks around, and then he starts getting nervous. He takes about 2 or 3 steps, and then he perks his head up and pins his ears back. And I've bow hunted enough. I've seen this way too many times. I know if I let him see me, then it's going to be game over. So I always keep my scope zoomed all the way out just for in case I get in any kind of scenario like this. So he's right under my tree, and I'll wheel around, grab my rifle, and spin on him. And by that time I look at him, he's booking it out there. And the first time I shoot, he's probably 30 yards. And I jack another one in it and shoot again. He's probably 50 yards, and then he disappears. And hang gun on the tree. Before I can even get the gun hung back on the tree, I got a phone call. My dad and the other guys at camp, and I said, I just killed him. He said, no, you didn't. I said, I did. I said, well, I think I did. And he said, all right, we're on the way out. I was going to wait on him to come before I went down there looking for blood and all, but the longer I sat there, the more trees I saw, and I said, dang, it'd been so easy for me to hit one of these trees while he was running through here. So I got down and walked over there, and he was piled up probably 70 yards from the tree.
Dude. Wow. Okay. I didn't know anything. Like, I think I'd read your story, but when I saw the deer, I immediately reached out to you. I didn't realize that he came running into the tree like that. Oh, that's intense.
Yeah, it was. It was probably 2 or 3 minutes after I quit rattling, and he ran all the way to the tree. He was probably 5 steps from the tree.
Man, I just want to say before we move on, that is such a good tip, an underrated simple tip. When you're rifle hunting, especially here in the South, keep it on. If you got a 3x9, it should live on 3 unless you need, you know, to crank it up a little bit. Because that, dude, I've been burned. My friends have been burned. Like, Colton had a buck in Kentucky a couple years ago that he could have killed, but he had a scope on like 8. And it came out too close, and like it just didn't work out for him. But like that is such a good tip. Keep that scope cranked down for when something like that happens. So, what was your reaction when you saw the deer and you got up to him?
Oh, I walked up to him and I looked at him. I knew exactly which deer he was. And I turned around and there's probably a 4-inch maple tree, and I just punched it.
I wish I could have seen that.
Oh, dude, that's crazy. So when he came running in, did you know exactly which deer it was?
Whenever he came running in, and he had his head cocked back, and I seen those main beams crossing like that. I immediately knew which deer it was.
God, that's insane. But see, it's a good point, and this I want to talk a little bit more about like this area that you're hunting in, but it's a good point about the advantage of calling. Kind of like what you're talking about with Tim Knight. I do be honest, like, because Tim was one of those guys when we first had on him and Richard Fodder, the two guys we've had on that really take calling very, very seriously. And kind of like what Tim mentioned in that podcast, like you're saying, like, you know, you wouldn't go turkey hunting without, you know, calls. Why would you go deer hunting without, you know, some kind of call, rattle antlers and or a grunt call? Mm-hmm. And like I killed a deer last year. It was the first year I've ever killed rattling in Alabama. Killed him in October on a muzzleloader hunt. And same situation as in like what you're talking about, high winds. I was down a creek bottom, hiked in, kept just hunting, scouting my way into a spot, ended up setting up. It was the last 10 minutes of light, 15 minutes of light. And, I mean, I was about to break my knuckles. I was rattling so hard on those antlers just to like get the sound to carry because it was so windy. And it was right when one of those storms was like pushing through. It was kind of like you're saying, spitting rain. And within less than 5 minutes, he comes coming off the top of the ridge, drops down, starts thrashing a tree. I shoot him at 25 yards of the muzzleloader. And to me, that kind of taught me something, specifically on the rattling. Like, there's certain situations like that where, you know, you get in some areas and some deer are just more aggressive than others. Like, there's some areas I've heard of some guys hunting some pieces of public land or some counties or you know, lease. And maybe it's because there's so many deer out there, like, the bucks really don't have to fight all that much. There's so many more does compared to bucks that, like, a buck's not necessarily maybe all that interested in sparring. Versus areas where it's a little more balanced deer herd, or there's just less deer in general. And if they want to breed, they got to make something happen. And I mean, kind of like what you're saying is like, seems like you've had quite a bit of success rattling and kind of taking what Tim Knight was saying. To explain your rattling style, are you doing a little bit more aggressive rattling, you would say, like when it comes to, like, overall volume, or how would you describe what you're currently doing?
So whenever I was probably like 12, 13, 14, whatever, I always took rattle antlers to me, but I never rattled in a buck because I just did whatever I saw on TV. And I would just bang, 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 bang. I mean, just making the loudest absolute racket I could. And then I don't know how many times I've done that, never rattled in a buck. So I put it down for several years. But then I hear people like Tim Knight and stuff, people that just absolutely believe in it. I picked them back up, but – and I think I heard the hunting public guys talking about this. Whenever you're rattling, you know, and if you watch a video of a buck fight, it's not just constant noise, just constant banging. Like, you have your initial hit, but then they kind of grind. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like a clang, 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 clang. It's not just a whole lot of racket. Now, when their feet, whenever they're fighting on like dry leaves or something, they're making a bunch of ground noise. But whenever I started, you know, doing your initial hit and then just kind of grinding them together, that's whenever I saw a huge uptick in the amount of deer I was calling in rattling.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's, well, I'll say I was, you know, about to take my hands off. It was from the grinding. It wasn't even from the impact. It was like just getting in there and popping those antlers, popping those ties together. By the way, I wanted to pull up Tim Knight's episode. Again, for video listeners, it's not on video. This is from almost 5 years ago, 4 years ago. It's episode 188. Again, we're about to, by the time this episode came out, we've already passed 600 episodes.
Yeah, this will probably be episode 601.
Yeah, so episode 188, pressure base hunting and a fresh look at calling with Tim Knight. Again, episode 188. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, stuff like that. It's a really good episode. Again, kind of a classic throwback. So I appreciate you kind of bringing that up. But yeah, that is a really good point. You know, talk about like the grinding aspect. Because yeah, if you go watch any videos of bucks actually fighting, or if you happen to, you know, get a witness one, yeah, there may be a loud commotion of them impacting each other, but even a lot of times it's not even that. It's like they just kind of walk up, get like, you know, a couple inches from each other, they lock antlers, and then they start to work on each other. And there's a lot of times an injury. I mean, you've heard this, like some crazy fighting in the past, but it's like they lock up, and it's almost like you're not hearing anything other than maybe ground noise if you're fairly close to the deer. And then all of a sudden they get a little space between each other, and they pop antlers again, and then they're kind of locked back up again. So that is a really good point you bring up there. So the rattling's been a huge part for you. It sounded like that setup was pretty interesting too. Again, that real thick creek bottom with all those down trees as an area that's kind of pinching those deer around for you as well. So that was pretty cool. Also, when you're looking at kind of going back, what other takeaways do you have from that hunt? Again, that maybe you'll kind of implement further, you know, going to this season, or maybe lessons learned, stuff like that? I mean, what's some of the, those big takeaways you learned specifically from that opportunity, that hunt?
Oh, next time, from now on, every time I rattle, you better believe that rifle will be in my hands. I will not leave it hanging on that in the tree. But yeah, I mean, it's little stuff like that can be the difference between, you know, letting a big buck get away or, you know, taking him home. I mean, just, it's just little stuff like that. And hunting, it's really hard because you really got to be on your P's and Q's to make it happen. Because all it takes is one time you don't do something that you normally do, and it could go wrong.
Yeah, I almost don't even want to talk about that because that bit me in the butt last year. So the second deer I killed, which we talked about this podcast, second deer I killed the first one in October, like October 29th. Second one I killed was later, like right around Thanksgiving weekend. And I called him in, grunted him in, and thankfully I heard him coming. I was blind calling, tending grunts. Came right through a pine, I think, shot him at like 10 yards, maybe with a rifle. Which I wasn't set up for that. I was set up to shoot way further, kind of like down on those roadbeds you're talking about. He popped out like right there underneath me in the tree I was in. The next day, I go back to the same spot because I know there's always like doe groups in this area. Go back to the same tree the next morning, do the exact same calling sequence, did it twice. By 7:20, again, it was one of those things that should have had the rifle in my hand, should have stood up because I had to stand up. So that trail he came in on, I had to stand up and shoot over another limb. I couldn't see him if I was sitting down in my stand. I was using a climber in that one tree. And ended up, I called second calling sequence, and I start hearing just that loud crunching, stick breaking, pop, and everything coming right down the exact same trail I shot the buck on the day before. Mm. And I got caught because the sun had come up, and it's like casting a shadow into these pines, and I can't see super great. Like the pines aren't like, they're not giant pines, but you know, they're tall enough. Like I can't get to the top of the pine trees when I climb up in a tree. And I can't see into it all that well. And all of a sudden I catch movement, and I was like contemplating, by the time I heard him like running to me through those pine trees, crap, I need to stand up and grab the rifle. Well, I had the rifle in my hand, but while I was sitting down, I can't shoot him from right here because the trail is coming in on, he's popping out again, 10, 15 yards. And I just sat there instead of standing up. And that was the dumbest decision because as I'm sitting, I catch his legs coming through like an opening in the pines that isn't more than probably, you know, maybe 12 inches in diameter. I see his legs, I see his brisket, and I see his neckline come all the way to his brisket. I can't tell what headgear he has. And a lot of our WMAs in Alabama have antler point restrictions, so I wasn't about to just try to shoot him and just see what happened. But if I was standing, I could have seen through another window and actually seen what he looked like because he stopped about 5 yards shorter than where the other deer did the day before. After a couple of minutes, you know, it got quiet. I kind of lost where he was at. I couldn't hear him anymore. And then, you know, 20, 30 minutes away or afterwards, he was gone. I have no idea where he went. Nice. And it's like the same situation, like if you're going to call, you better be ready to shoot. Like if you're in the saddle, you know, it's just have your bow, have your gun in your hand. If you're in a stand, same thing. If you know you're going to have to stand up to potentially shoot if they come up close, you know, have all that kind of, you know, ahead of time in your head thought out, because that definitely bit me in the butt with that buck.
Oh, yeah. No, this deer behind me, I seen this deer 5 times before I killed him. And one time I actually rattled him into 30 yards on the ground. I just had no idea he was even in it. I rattled him in. I had no idea. I sat there for probably 30 minutes. And I stood up to leave, and I turned around, and he's sitting there looking at me 30 yards, and he just bolts out of there.
By the way, I don't know if you're on a laptop or on your phone. Can you tilt that sucker up? I want to see what that bad boy looks like. Okay, sweet.
Oh, yeah. So, carries that mass all the way out.
Yep. So, but that's a really good point when you're talking about, like, again, the calling. I think calling is one of those things that you have to – oh, dude, heck yeah. There you go. Get some times on them. But calling is one of those things that I think you really have to – if you're going to do it, and you're going to do it like Tim Knight talks about or Richard Fott talks about, you have to be ready at all times. And that's that's probably like the mental drain aspect of calling. Because, like, you know, we're talking about calling every 15 minutes. Like, I do the same thing, especially grunting, like every 15, 20 minutes calling. And it's like I kind of get, you know, after the first call sequences, like right around daylight, right when I think a buck's going to come in, after I get kind of lazy just sitting there. And, you know, that's a good chance when that deer's going to come up. And if you don't have your gun or your bow ready, you know, he might be there for a split second. And if you're not ready, you might not be able to execute that shot, and then he's gone, especially in how thick a lot of the cover we all hunt in.
Oh, yeah.
So Let me ask you this. Also, so again, Tim Knight's been a huge impact for you. Is there been any other interesting either conversations, discussions, or guests that have maybe kind of flipped the switch on for you? I mean, you talked about Hubs, like specifically on that place. I mean, is any of that kind of conversation kind of made you think differently specifically on that property and how you hunt it?
Yeah, I would say, with you know, I forgot. There's been a lot of guys y'all talked with about Hubs and stuff on there, and it's kind of made me look at things differently and how I used to look at stuff and how deer use the terrain. And it's kind of flipped it around. And especially whenever y'all talk with guys that's been doing it for decades, you know, like Bobby Worthington, guys like that, you know, those guys can take you to a T. And I think the good thing about hunting public land is you get to go out, because like if it wasn't for like hunting public land, I would see the same 200 acres every time I went hunting. But going out and seeing different WMAs and different national forests and properties and stuff, you know, I can listen to this show and somebody kind of puts a bug in my ear. I can kind of go out and see what I see and see how it correlates to what they're talking about.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that's a good point. That's one interesting thing about the show that I think some people realize, but if you're a newer listener, you might not understand this because you just haven't, like, someone might not have heard all the different perspectives, but there's so many different ways to be successful whitetailing, especially in the South. So, like, we may have one guy on this week, and I'll just throw this out there because, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, talking about scent. He might be a diehard, you know, scent elimination management kind of guy, scent control guy. We'll have another guy on the next week that is like absolutely against it, does something completely different, and they both kill big deer. And like, there's so many different ways to kill big deer. It's just trying to figure out based off where you hunt, how you like to hunt, what you're already comfortable doing, like who can, you know, what guests may spark that fire. And you're like, man, I might just need to try to implement, you know, some of these small things this guest talked about and see how it pays off. And that's the reason why I think we get a bunch of listener success stories. Is it's not like you're going out there and doing exactly the same thing that this one guy talks about. It's just kind of cherry picking a little bit about, like, maybe they do one thing that I can really start implementing. This other guy does something that I really like, I'll implement it. And you kind of make your own individual formula of what gives you confidence when you're hunting. And that's where I think we have a lot more success coming from when it comes to listeners.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because that was my fault whenever I first started hunting public land. I was looking for any bit of information I could find. And I stumbled upon the guys that were, you know, and it's real big out west. You're talking about finding buck beds and shooting them out of their bed and being there at 7:30 in the morning and this, that, and the other. Because I would go out and I would find beds and I'd be like, oh, he's going to be here in the morning on this wind, coming over this ridge, he's toast, and then go see nothing. But it kind of took me to do that a couple times where you can't, like, a guy can tell you how he's killing deer and what's working for him, but that does not mean it's going to work for you. The best thing I can tell somebody that would listen to this show would be, you know, listen, and you're going to pick up little nuggets here and there from a guy, and then you just kind of keep that in the back of your mind when you're out and about scouting or looking at properties, and then you start – it's just like a puzzle. You're trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Absolutely. Well, Tate, I think that's a great point to kind of wrap up on this listener success story segment. So, Tate, again, greatly appreciate you hopping on with this. Congratulations on that deer, man. What a deer from, again, Georgia. So, hopefully you have another great year. Maybe you're not going to kill another 160, you know, but maybe
you kill 170.
Hey, who knows, dude? Anything could happen down there, man. And the land of peanuts and cotton.
Yeah.
Anything's possible. So, definitely best luck to you. And, is there anything else you want to kind of wrap up with before we kind of head on over to the Q&A section of the podcast?
I think I'm good. I sure appreciate y'all having me on here.
Awesome, Tate. Appreciate it, guys. And listeners, viewers, again, we'll hop on over here to our next segment, talk about some Q&As and some breakdown from Monday's episode. So appreciate y'all.
All right, guys, that's going to wrap up our listment of the week. Jacob, what's going on?
All kinds of stuff. Getting ready for the World Deer Expo. Actually, starts tomorrow, Friday.
Yeah, by the time this drops, yeah.
Yeah, by the time this starts, we have the World Deer Expo this Friday through Sunday, July 19th to the 21st in Birmingham, Alabama. Super fun. Really excited for that show. So we're going to have a lot more hats. Excited to see everybody coming to that show. But other than that.
Booth 605?
605, yeah, booth 605 upstairs in the Rut Funnel. Okay.
Yeah, right in the rut funnel. If you've ever been to the Deer Expo, you know that there's a upstairs and a downstairs in the BJCC. And to get to the downstairs, you've got to go through quite a pinch point. Before you get to the escalators and everything, it's where you would want to put a mock scrape, for instance. You know, if we were deer hunting this spot, and we're right there where you would put that scrape. So it also makes a pretty good visual.
Yeah, our booth is at scrape. It'd be the perfect spot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's the X. Yep. It's a good spot. It's the rut funnel.
So we'll have Vortex right across from us. We have Michael Perry and Kathy Perry going to be off to our left, booth 604, I believe, or maybe they're 606. And then to our right is going to be Daniel Lemon and Jeremy Aaron from Do-It-Yourself Hunter as well. And our buddies at Weaver Meat Processing is going to be next to them.
Yep.
So it's going to be a party, man.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, dude. It's going to be like our whole row.
Yeah.
We've got all our people with us.
It's going to be a good time. So, but yeah, get that going on. And other than that, man, just, I don't know, we're kind of in, I call this like the summer blues a little bit, getting ready for like fall to come, like getting ready for dove season to kick off here in September, deer season, the whole nine yards. I can't believe how far are we into it. We're a minute and a half into the podcast. I already said whole nine yards.
Oh my gosh, man. Yep. Quit mentioning it. You're going to ruin it for people.
It is what it is.
Golly.
But anyways, other than that, no, like today we had, or on this episode, we had Tate Kite.
Yeah.
From Georgia on for a listener success story. And he killed a hammer in southwest Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a big deer.
Yep.
Very big deer.
Once again, the deep south, like coastal plain, kind of showing out a little bit that there are big deer down there.
Yeah. It's got to be in the right spots. But again, you know, he's coming from an interesting area, which, by the way, I didn't even ask you how you're doing, but we'll just skip right on by it.
It don't matter.
I mean, you've been running some trail cameras.
I've been running some trail cameras, son.
I think, what else you've been doing?
Well, I put one trail. Well, we'll get to it in a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right, I got you.
The hunt continues.
The hunt continues.
Yeah,
for Steve,
it's getting. See, you're saying this is the summer blues right now. I'm getting fired up right now because Jacob doesn't run any trail cameras at all, like ever. I mean, he has some. He had a Lone Wolf Custom Gear trail camera. I don't even know if they still make them. Do they?
I don't know.
You bought one when they first came out, and it sat in the package in the closet for at least 3 years. And then finally, I was like, give me that freaking camera. I'm going to go put it out.
Yeah.
So I went and put it out somewhere.
Yep. So, yeah, have not been putting any trail cameras out right now. And I was talking to some guys. Actually, I talked to Jacob Schlenard from Mobile Hunters podcast. And, you know, he's up in Wisconsin. And it was funny because we were talking about, like, the whole – what did I say wrong?
I don't know. You said Schlenard?
Schlenard.
Like Leonard Schlenard?
How do you say his name?
Schlenard. There's no D on the end.
I don't want to put a D on there. It's not barbed wire. It's barbed
wire. That's how I remember his name, actually. Jacob, if you're listening right now, that's how I remember your name. Leonard Schlenard.
Schlenard, yeah. Dude, he should change his name. It's so catchy.
Dude, that's very brandable. Jacob, if you're listening, you should immediately change your Instagram handle to that.
Jacob Schlenard.
Yep. Anyways.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So you were talking to him.
Yeah, and... first off, we had an interesting conversation about thick cover, okay? And he made a post about this. I don't know if you saw this on the Mobile Hunters Facebook group. And he was walking through like a cattail marsh, like just tall grass and cattails. And definitely, it looks, I just walking through, I can imagine, like, I don't know, it can be fairly humid in Wisconsin. But just like that sun bearing down that and the ground being moist and like, how humid it probably would be in that grass, like just misery in the sun.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's crimp.
Kind of jump around the conversation. He posted about that. Like, oh man, we got thick cover up here. And all the southerners jumped on. And they're like, man, that looks like a breeze to walk through. They're like, man, you come walk through a pond thicket down here where it's just a wall, like everything wants to cut you.
Everything wants to hurt you.
Yeah. And it was an interesting conversation. But we had a great conversation about it. And he was talking about running trail cameras. And, you know, trying to catch bucks on camera and kind of building up some inventory and patterns for opening day, which I think they opened October 1st. But that's something that I'm interested in talking to more and more people. And we're going to do a podcast on this coming up about if you are interested in running trail cameras right now in the summertime, more than likely, if you're in the deep south, depending on when your state opens, though, Georgia's a different story. They open early. Kentucky, we don't really classify them being the south, at least the deep south, but they open real early. Tennessee has a pretty fairly early opener in September. But how many people have success, especially in these October openers, staying on a buck, that's when they're not using some kind of bait or attractant, and staying on a deer as they go from velvet to hardhorn and they shift and the batch groups break up, how many people actually have success sticking with deer? Because it seems like the last time we ran trail cameras, I mean, like crazy hard in the summer was 2019, maybe 2020. You, me, Pike, on some piece of public.
That's the last time you did.
But I'm saying as a group, yes, I'm bringing myself into it. And well, dude, that was the most cameras I think we ever ran. I think we were running like 20 something cameras between.
Yeah,
all
together. Yeah, I think that's right. That was the summer that you put out those cameras that you just picked up, like.
Picked one up. I got most of them. There was one I forgot about, and by the time I found it, someone pulled the SD card. They could have it. And the camera was just sitting there. And just, I mean, it was.
Wasn't it full of water or something?
Oh, it was bad. Yeah. It was full of water. And it's not like it can flood right there, but it just decided it wanted to waterboard itself at some point. So, but that year, you know, we had I never got any like real big deer on camera. I think, did you have any on your cameras that year, that summer? I know Pike had a bunch. That's when he had the Wizard on camera that Scott ended up killing later that season. Scott
I think Sears. I had one really nice one. I think the majority of those cameras were Pike's. I think that we were helping Pike put out cameras because I didn't have a lot of cameras at that time.
I think I had 11 over there. There was on that one area, though. And yeah. It was like does, and like I bumped a bat because that's when I bumped the bachelor group, found that deadhead of that buck we had on camera like a year before, 2 years before.
Yeah, and across the valley from right there is where I got a pretty nice one on camera.
Yeah. So, but
split G2 buck.
But what I'm saying is, like those deer, give example like what Pike had on camera. He was able to stick with the Wizard, the big buck, but I think he had some other ones that kind of just like disappeared. It took him a little while to relocate. But that's what I'm interested in is like the guys that are running summer cameras, how they're going about relocating bucks, if they shift, if they don't shift, the whole, like just all that. And that's what I'm really interested in kind of figuring out more so, because I'm sure there's other people out there that have that question. It's like, okay, if I get your big buck on camera now, if he sheds, when he sheds velvet, what's the thought process on relocating that deer? Because some deer may stay right there. Like the 10 point, he never really left. You had him in the summer, had him all fall. That deer was just like, man, this is my spot. There's other deer. Like you hear guys like, I remember a conversation we had with Jamie McKay. And I think it was maybe just me and him on an episode. I don't know if you joined for that one. It's the last time we had Jamie on. And we were talking about trail camera. I was talking to him about trail cameras. And he was talking about specifically like, man, you get all these bachelor groups in the summertime, like big deer. And then by like, first week of September, they're shedding velvet where he's at, and they're just like gone. Like some of them stay, some of them relocate, but some you might have to go 3/4 of a mile into a different drainage system to find those deer. And I think there's a really good art to what consists of that. And that kind of goes back to talking to Jacob about him trying to relocate bucks and staying on deer, just because like they have like where he's at, he's on a lot of those marshes, and the deer are like all in and around that. And he was telling me, he's like, when the pressure comes on, those deer are in that stuff. Like, they're not on the edge of it. Like, yeah, you might kill on an island or a little hardwood ridge top around it. He's like, when the pressure comes on, they are in that crap, and you got to kill them in that. And he was, like, talking to me about some of the setups, like his buck he killed last year, not being able to get very high up in the tree, shooting down into those cattails. And it just makes me wonder, like, again, in certain areas, how much those deer shift between velvet, the hardhorn, into the rut, and kind of going back to like GPS studies we did, those episodes we did with Bronson Strickland, you know, the percentage of bucks that are more homebody versus the ones that are a little more, what do you call them? Like bucks that like to move a whole bunch more. I forget the term he called it. But there's like a certain percentage that were homebodies, a certain percentage that just were like more roamers. And it's like the roamers are almost like the ones that like, man, it's awesome getting a photo of them, keeps you excited, but like may never see that deer again, especially if you're hunting like a small piece of private or something.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, with Jamie McKay, it makes sense being where he hunts is a big wood setting. And the deer have to travel a lot further to actually get everything that they need there. So it kind of makes sense that there's that big shift. But yeah, I mean, with Pike, he ended up killing that buck that following year or that fall. And he killed it like 40 yards from where he got it on camera a whole bunch all summer long. And that was in December when
he
killed it.
Was that the same year?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Was it?
Yep, that was the same year. Yeah, because that was right before COVID.
Oh, okay.
And but anyways, so yeah, that's one thing that we learned with him was at the time, like if you think back to 2019, what we were really curious about summer scouting and stuff, and we were trying to do a lot of episodes back then on summer scouting, and we're trying to ask people, do they relocate or do they not relocate? And we were all under the impression like, oh, they're going to shift. That was about the same time that we had the Josh Driver episode where he's talking about, you know, cast a wide net with your cameras in the summertime. and then, you know, kind of narrow it down when you find the buck that you want to target, and then basically try to predict where he's going to go to. So if you got 10 cameras and you're on him for, you know, a while, put like, take three of those 10 cameras and go put them in spots where you think he might shift to, and try to stay ahead of him. And then what we found out that year with our cameras is that a lot of them don't move. Like if you're in pine country, really diverse country with a lot of thickets and a lot of food, a lot of browse, they don't have to move really. Mm-hmm. Some of them, and I think Bronson kind of tied a bow around this for me at least, in that they all have different personalities. So some of them do move, but a lot of them don't. So like you still have like that roamer buck that he might have two distinct home ranges. But a lot of them don't. A lot of them just hang out in one little area. And yeah, the 10 point's a great example of that, dude. I got him on camera there in July and January and every month in between that. Mm-hmm. Like he just never left. So I'd love to go in there and find his sheds, but it's a little late for that.
Probably need to run a fire to go find those suckers, depending on where you draw them at.
For sure.
How thick it is.
For sure.
But again, that's something, it's just an interesting discussion because, like, great example, like Anthony down at the farm. He doesn't run cameras. He doesn't start running cameras till like early, mid-August because he's like – also because they rut, again, Christmas, December, you know, late December, early January down there. And at this point, it's kind of like your club. Like they're not developed enough to really know exactly what deer you're looking at. But by the time you get to August, like those deer down there typically don't shed their velvet until like maybe mid-September roughly, give or take.
I mean, even into October.
There's a chance. I think most of his deer down there, it's kind of mid to late September is when they've shed. Well, I can ask him, though. But he's like, I just don't care about running cameras in July. It just, to me, doesn't make a whole bunch of sense. Like, I'd rather wait a little bit more, wait for them to develop a little bit more on the rack, and then kind of figure out which deer are back, any new deer, or, like, go through old pictures. Like, is this the same, like, one of the bucks I had last year? Maybe he blew up or had a different kind of characteristic this year. And, it's just interesting because he's been doing that forever. Like he doesn't run anything like in June or July. Typically, it's always sometime in August. And it's like when we were kids. I've told the story before, but I think it was down there. It might have been during dove season or even before dove season. Me and Christopher down at the farm, and Christopher brought like a one of those scrape drippers. You know, like with a plastic rubber tube, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he put like some doe and estrus out there and made like a mock scrape on the farm. And Anthony got so pissed. He got so upset. He found it later and he was like, what the heck? Why did you do it? Like, these deer ain't rutting for 4 months. What are you doing? And anyway, but it's just, yeah, just early. And again, that was like right around when he started putting cameras out.
I wonder what a buck thinks when he gets a whiff like doe estrus in July or August. He's like, are we already doing this? Hey. He's like, I haven't even shed my velvet yet.
Yeah. Well, it's like Drew Atkinson, which actually, let me look up that episode number with Drew talking about his scrape hunting tactics. You know, killing bucks on scrapes in early season, like in Arkansas, like late September, early October.
Yeah, and he was talking about using doe estrus.
Yeah, and he's using doe estrus then. And it's more like a curiosity scent. Let me find him real quick, his episode. But it's just interesting because like a guy like that, he's had quite a bit of success doing that early and also doing it late in the season, like in January, and catching bucks where they're wanting to come in and check it out. Let's see. Oh. King on bucks early. No, here's the scrape one. So that episode was with Drew Atkinson's 520. That'd be an easy one to remember. Mature Bucks on Scrape Lines with Drew Atkinson, episode 520. That is on YouTube.
Yep, that one is on YouTube.
So if you're on YouTube, because we get questions all the time like, oh, we mentioned like Tom Brownlee's episode 315. Man, I can't find it on YouTube. Yeah, that was before we did YouTube,
yeah,
like video podcast. But this one, episode 520, again with Drew Atkinson, Mature Bucks on Scrape Lines. That's when he goes through his early, mid, and late season scrape hunting tactics. That's a really, really good one. And again, that one is on YouTube if you want to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, going back to the velvet thing, I got buddies in different states who are sending me buck photos, like y'all know who you are, sending me stuff from Iowa and Kansas and Kentucky.
Zach.
Yeah. And his bucks, first of all, they're like gigantic. But second of all, they're framed out. They got the time. Like they're good to go.
They're doing it.
They're doing it.
Yeah.
And then I check my cameras here in Alabama with our dang mid-January rut, and these deer – like, it was earlier in the month. It was like around the 4th of July. I checked cameras, and these deer were like just making the turn on their main beam. Like they weren't even close. They weren't even throwing a G2 yet. And I was just like, oh, is this just a tiny deer or what? Well, we checked him again the other day, and man, we got this one buck. It might be the 10 point. We don't know because he's not framed out. But the last video that at least I got of him, he'd made the turn. His G2s are coming in. His G2s are already really nice. He's got really good mass, and he is like way outside the ears. I mean, way outside the ears already. I'm like, come on. And his brow tines are really nice too. So he looks really similar to the 10 point so far. Big old, like clearly a mature buck. So we'll see what he ends up being. We got a couple other ones that are really nice as well. Like we got an 8 point who's nice and outside of the ears, and he's throwing a good G2, and he's got good mass too. And then I got another buck that kind of looks like he's got a weird color scheme on his coat. I don't know if he's like wet in the image or what, but he's like, he's got like this splotchy, like his coat looks different. Like almost like if he got wet, like if he crawled through a river or something mm-hmm. like that. But we're not that close to the river in this spot.
It should. Unless
and like, it's only like his back leg and then a spot on his side. So it doesn't, like, I'm like, I don't know how
like,
he...
Does it look like road rash? Like he got hit by a car?
I'm like, he's either piebald, and it's a black, it's the night image, so I don't know what it is. I'm like, he's either piebald or he got, but he's not walking with a limp or something. Because my first thought was he got a bunch of hair knocked off of my car going down the highway, but he wasn't limping or anything. So I don't know.
He's tough.
Dude, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what we've got a bunch of on camera is freaking coyotes. Oh, my gosh.
Is the guy in the club still trapping that one dude?
I don't think so. I pass by his little dirt hole sets all the time, and I haven't seen anything caught in a long time. And the sets, one of them the other day looked like someone might have done something with it. But
dude, you got to get back into it.
I mean, maybe.
Dude, you used to. I've never trapped coyotes. That'd be fun to go do.
That's very time-consuming. We could film some stuff around it. It'd be kind of fun.
It'd be fun. I mean, yeah.
We just need to commit 2 weeks. You got to go out there every day. Like, you can't just leave them. That's why it's time. You have to go every day and check them in the mornings. So that's what I, when I was running them before, it was just at like daybreak, I'd just drive. And that's why you put them all next to roads too. One, because the coyotes, they walk the roads a lot. Mm-hmm. But two, so you can just drive, you know, you just do a loop through there. And if you don't have anything, you just go home.
Yeah, we could do that. It'd be fun. Okay. I literally never, the only thing we've ever trapped is like coons and like the dog proof traps.
Yeah.
Fun. We had some coons get waxed by some coyotes.
Dude, I'm serious. Like, there's a lot of freaking coyotes on this place.
Well, what are you doing? Let's do it.
We've been putting our cameras out. Me and Cody and Sandra and Tiffany, we all went and rode around on their side-by-side on the club. And we went to a couple food plots where one of the club members has planted some, I think they're cow peas or something like that.
Or iron clay peas, something like that.
Yeah, and he's planted strips of them in some of our bigger food plots, and the deer are just... And, well, actually, in one of the food plots, they don't look like they've been touched, really. Mm-hmm. In another one, they're getting hammered. And so we put a camera out on that food plot specifically, and we've been getting a lot of bucks on it so far. But in the other spots, we got them on creek crossings, and we got them in shady SMZs. And I mentioned this last time, the SMZ that is in the planted pines or the thin pines, mm-hmm. and when you look down there at this SMZ, like it's dark, like it's really, really dark, and you can see like literally it's so canopied out that it's like black underneath there. And then you walk down into it and there's a nice draft going down it and there's a nice breeze. And so I went down in there and put a camera out, me and Piper went, and that's where I got that buck that looks like he's got the road rash or whatever. So he came by, and then I got a doe coming by real consistent, and then I've got coyotes coming through there like every single day. And so I checked that camera, and then we put some more kind of down there in that same area. We've already got some little bucks using those. Those are cell cameras that we put out. So it's going good so far. We found, actually, that reminds me, I don't know why, but I can't find buck sign on this club. Like, I cannot find buck sign on this club for some reason. And somebody had mentioned the other day, I think it might have been Shane or maybe Paul in one of our group messages, mentioned something about you like getting some kind of map where you have the sun exposure and looking at the sun exposure. Like, there's a tool on CalTopo that does this. Looking at the sun exposure for like 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. So our sunset here is like 7:56 tonight. So look at the sun exposure from 7 p.m. and see which areas are shaded blue
So which areas are going to be in the shade at 7? So that's the first place where shade gets cast. Mm-hmm. And go to those places because that's where the thermals are going to fall first. So we went to a place like that. I went and did that, found a spot on the club, went in there, and it was like – it was actually Saturday, and it was right when Trump got shot. And it was, so it was like 6 o'clock. My phone blew up mm-hmm. with all you guys in the text messages. So it was like probably 6:30. But as me and Mike were standing there, you know, being like, holy crap, what happened? I could feel the thermals already shift. And it's like way before sundown. And I had milkweed with me. And so I was pulling out my milkweed, and it was already falling. And you walk like 45, 50 feet up the hill, and you pull it out, and it's sucking up into the thin pines. But if you're down there in that bottom, it was going down, and it felt real nice. And we kind of start looking around real close at everything, and just standing in one spot, I counted 7 rubs, which for this club
is a lot.
Is a bunch. That's like a bunch of rubs. So I got real excited. So we put 2 cameras out in that spot. I put one facing the creek coming through there. It's got big cut banks, and it's real rocky. And there's a spot on the creek where it kind of flows around this tree, and it made like a little sandbank. And so it's almost like a little bridge that goes across the creek where everything else is cut bank. So I put one right there looking at that. And then probably 40 yards down, Mike put another camera looking on the other side of the creek. So we got like this whole bottom covered, and we already got a little buck right there. But that camera's only been out for, I guess, 4 days now. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But man, I'm pretty excited, man.
Okay.
I'm very excited. So see, you got summer blues. You ought to go, and you ought to go crappie fishing. Or you ought to go put some cameras
in. Dude, I tried crappie fishing. So, 4th of July weekend, went up to Gunnersville.
Yeah.
Parents' place. And, dude, like two 4th of Julys ago, it was like in 3 days, I think I caught, it was like 65 keepers I caught right there at their boat. And this insane. Dude, I did not catch, which I was only there for a day, like one day and left the next morning. I only caught 2 crappie the whole time. None of them were like of size. My sister caught a keeper, and my brother caught like 2 keepers, whatever, flayed those. But the neighbors all have like those big green underwater lights. Now everybody has them. It was the most insane. I know this is not legal to do, but dude, if you had a cast net, it was the most insane thing you've ever seen of these giant crop. Dude, like one of the guys, he was like, dude, that might be the state record right there swimming. Like, dude, I'm talking gigantic fish. Okay, like get the spear. Like you can't spear. I don't think you can't spearfish in Alabama. But like if you were in like some of those lakes up in Arkansas where you can spearfish, that would be the move, is like night spear hunting with one of those lights and just sitting there, dude. Like just go down and just, oh my gosh, it's insane. But dude, they wouldn't eat a jig. Like I was too petty to go buy minnows and like typically just catch them on crappie jigs. It was so frustrating.
Dude.
I was so frustrated.
Just went and got you some manners.
I'm like, dude, I'm done. I'm like, I can't take this no more. This is terrible. Terrible, dude. So anyways, yeah, that didn't make it any better. Trust me, if I would have caught a bunch, I'm like, oh, we're just going to crappie fishing. We're just going to go every weekend.
Well, you know, we got this like little tiny pond on the club. This pond is like maybe an acre. Mm-hmm. And it is slam full of crappie. It's like my dream. It's like my dream pond, dude. Every time we go there, we catch a bunch. So now that's what I've been doing. I stashed my canoe out there, and we've just been going out there. And
by the way, we had a listener.
Getting them.
We got a listener, Sam, who's a Patreon member.
Uh-huh.
You know, he found your club, right?
Oh, yeah. He casually mentioned that to me.
Yeah.
I was like, how did you find it? Out of curiosity. Yeah. Like I'm – it's cool. I'm just like – I'm kind of wondering, like, what did I say that tipped you off? Actually, no, I think he told me. I think I put a drone shot on something,
that's
and that's how he found it. I was like, oh, that's good to know. That's good to know.
Yep.
Very good to know.
And then also he found the thicket based off how you talked about over the 10 points at. He sent it to me. He's like, is that it? I'm like, you're within about 150 yards, 200 yards over the deer's where he's, yeah.
All right, Sam, I can bring a guest. I mean, shoot.
He's going to come all the way down from Maryland.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I was like, dang, dude. I'm like, all right. I'm like, I told him, like, because he showed me that. We talked about the Patreon meeting last Thursday. And the hunters hang out, and it was so funny. And he's like, I'm like, Sam, you got too much free time on your hand. I'm sure your employer really loves it. He's like, dude, I work like 4 days a week. I'm off Friday, Saturday, Sunday. He's like, man, I got nothing but free time on the weekend if it's not hunting season. And I'm like, okay, note taken, dude. I'm like, cool. But anyway, But yeah, he brought that up. I thought that was so funny. But no, I mean, like, there's a couple areas that I'm interested in checking out, like where I found specifically that second shed during turkey season where I was turkey hunting at with Thomas when he killed his second bird.
Okay.
I want to go back and not necessarily that parcel, but part of that public and see what I could find buck-wise because, like, the habitat's pretty freaking good. And, like, I was fine. Like, we found one spot where actually you went in there and turkey hunted. But one day I was like, man, there's, like, three birds in here. You didn't hear a single bird the whole day.
Yeah, you gar-holed me.
Yeah, well, whatever. There's a big scrape up there on one of those ridges. And I don't think they're going to use it this year because it's kind of like just how the habitat lays out now. But those deer are still in that area. I'm very interested in seeing, like, what the quality bucks are over there.
You don't think they're going to use the scrape?
Maybe.
Why wouldn't they use the scrape?
It'd probably be nighttime.
Oh, because it's open now?
Yeah. So, but I want to go check
it. You don't know? You throw a camera.
I know. Well, I was thinking about it. I'm interested in checking it out, see what it looks like now. But I'm very interested in checking, seeing what that looks like. So, anyway. This is going to be exciting.
It's been a really busy summer so far for us, like with all the shows. We've just had a lot going on from a work standpoint.
Well, speak about shows.
So I was going to say, after that one that we're about to announce, I think that we'll have more time. Are you going to scout this summer? Is that what you're saying with that? Yeah. You're going to go out and scout?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I want to go.
Okay. No, you get the club, man. You stay on your previous lane. I'm going out with the pores on public, baby.
I'm going out with the pores.
Yeah, no. So, but yeah, no, I wanted to summer scout that area, but also getting into, I'm just interested in branching out to a couple of areas that we've been hunting and just seeing where could we find more success like that early bow season. Like there's some other parcels I want to run back up to and go scout and get a better idea for like early bow season time frame.
Yeah.
But also one thing we haven't mentioned is Monday's episode we kind of talked about last week, but going back and looking at Todd's episode we did with him.
Yeah.
And like the whole ground hunting, that's kind of opened my perspective maybe a couple areas and check and trying that out and trying to build some confidence hunting off the ground. Like we had Mason Brook, who over in Georgia killed two really nice bucks last year on his club that were, I think his listener success story comes out probably in a couple weeks.
Yeah, it'll be out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, we've already recorded, but he had another really nice buck. He's had two nice bucks show up this summer, and he had one show up I think he's a Big Ten, and he's like, where that buck lives, he's like, I'm going to have to hunt him off the ground. I'm going to try to do what Todd's doing because it's like there's no trees within 400 yards of that area.
Okay.
And he's like, nobody really hunts it other than like gun season. But like even gun season, like I don't know how it sets up, whether it's, you know, you're having to use a tripod stand or guys are sitting on the ground or whatever. But he's like, there's a couple SMZs there with like really small trees that I think that buck's going to be using. And I'm going to try to ghillie hunt it.
Mm.
So I'm like, that's pretty slick. And I've been thinking of some areas that are kind of like that it could potentially pay off. Plus, getting some more experience doing that before we go to Kansas. That's kind of like my thought process.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of working through the kinks because I don't want to have to go to Kansas. And we're in our mind planning on, if we can get a tree, great, but really focus on trying to hunt off the ground and getting out there and not having like a system dialed of like how I'm setting up, you know, just working through all the kinks.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to do that here before we go out there and potentially screw up any opportunities.
100%. Me too. Man, I'm so excited to do some scouting. Like I got like seven cameras out so far this year, four on public, two on private. Well, if you count Mike's cameras, I've got four on public and five on private. If you count, Mike's cameras. So
you got four on public right now?
Mm-hmm. Bro, I ain't telling you nothing.
I know you left one.
Oh, wait. Okay. So I've got six on public. Actually,
how'd you go from four to six? You left two?
I've put four out this summer, and I left two from last year.
Now you left one. Where's the other one? I'm trying to think where the other one.
At the frying pan.
Oh, well, oh.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
We got to go get that one, too. You walked right by it. You didn't really walk right by that
one.
No. You hit the ridge line.
Yeah, we didn't get anywhere near that.
The other one, God almighty, I'm dreading that. I almost went and got it this past weekend.
Well, actually,
but it was 98 degrees, and I'm like, I'm about to walk 4 miles.
Well, this week it doesn't really help us because we get the expo coming up in a couple days. But I think it's this week or next week. It's supposed to be like in the mid-80s, low 80s for like a couple days.
Like during the week?
Uh-huh. I think during
the you might just need to take a day off, bro, and get on up there.
I'm almost – it might be maybe over on the weekends. I don't know. I just saw James Spann post about it.
Oh.
So I'm like, okay. I think actually it is next week. So, but anyways, okay, going back. So we're talking about the expo, got all distracted, running cameras and stuff. Another announcement for all of Georgia listeners out there and viewers, we're going to be at the GOM Blast Expo in Emerson, Georgia.
Yep, Emerson, Georgia.
Which is next week. So it's July, 26th, 7th, and 8th, I think, is next Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
And super excited. That's gonna be a fun show. So, yeah, July 26th, 27th, 28th, Emerson, Georgia, GON Blast Expo. We're going to have a booth there. Again, you're going to have hats. They sell out. Hopefully, we have enough to make it to the World Deer Expo and have some for that show. We probably will. But definitely come hang out again at the GON Blast. We'll make an announcement.
And ironically, our booth is also 605 for that show.
Yeah, we had 605 for
the World Deer Expo and 605 for the GON Outdoor Blast.
Dude, if there was some kind of like, I don't know, some kind of bet you could have made on that, dude. Like, what's the statistics of that was going to happen?
I don't know.
I don't know. They don't feel like it'd be super high. But anyways, I'm really excited because I've heard good things about that show. Plus, it's going to be fun to be able to hang out with some Georgia listeners.
Yeah, it's going to be great, man. I can't wait for that one.
So
that's the Truck Buck Shootout.
Yep.
They're giving away a Chevy Silverado, I think.
Silverado.
Let me tell you something about my Chevy Silverado. Only the real ones get that, dude. If you get that joke, then me and you probably get along. so they're doing the Truck Buck Shootout. Actually, one of the listener success stories that we recorded the other day, it's not out yet, but he will be shooting in the Truck Buck Shootout. Adam, mountain buck guy, shot it up in the mountains.
Sorry, Adam, let me think.
150-inch Georgia buck from the mountains.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yeah! Yep. Okay. That's another great listener success story coming up.
We recorded a whole basket full of them.
Yeah, I'm trying to track them all.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to remember. We recorded four in a row.
Yep.
He's actually shooting for the truck. So that's going to be fun.
Hope he's been practicing with his air gun.
Gun. Southern Outdoorsman listener needs to win that truck.
Oh,
that'd be awesome.
Full interview on the podcast afterwards.
Yes.
Got truck pulled up.
Yep.
I moved my head over here like it was going to sit behind us in the studio. That won't work. I have to open a wall to bring it in here. But I'm super excited for that because the World Deer Expo, they used to have with when AON, Alabama Outdoor Newsletter, or was it Alabama Outdoor News? Is it News? Okay. When they were around, they would have the Truck Buck Shootout in Alabama. And my uncle, Michael, he's been in it. I think he might have shot 1 year. But he would always submit a buck every single year for it. But it was cool because they give away like rifles and boat. I mean, if you won like the biggest deer that was submitted that week, like you won some stuff, okay?
Yeah.
Which is like legit, like, you know, not just a couple hundred bucks, like $1,000, a couple $1,000 worth of gear.
A bow or kitted out rifle,
whatever. And, you know, they got rid of it. But it was always cool going to the World Deer Expo and watching them shoot there. And I don't remember, it might have been one of the last years they did it. I actually went and watched it because typically when I was there, like on Saturday when they shot, I would go look at it. I might watch them shoot for a little bit, but I never stayed for the whole thing. But I watched the final two guys getting down to shoot, and I forgot the dude that won it. But Alan Summerford, didn't he win it 1 year? I think he did.
I think he might have.
I think he actually
won. Because he like casually mentioned it. I was like, what?
Yeah, I'm almost certain. Like when he killed his giant buck, I think he won it that year, won the truck. Alan, let us know if that was accurate or not. You might not have.
I feel like I remember him mentioning that.
Yeah. So it's like, that's pretty sweet. I mean, listen,
I wish I could win a truck.
I'd be calling back, what kind of pellet gun y'all shooting again? What's the distance? What we got to shoot again? I think it's like an egg or something they got to shoot, or they used to shoot. I don't know what it is now. I don't know. We'll see what they do in Georgia. But that'd be sweet. But first off, to do that, you got to kill the biggest buck that week that was submitted.
Yeah.
So some weeks it might be a 110-inch deer. Other weeks it might be a 160 in order to win, depending on like what week you kill that deer in. It's like a lot of times it seemed like the guys that had the best chance is the dudes that always would kill like a nice buck like late October, early November before anything got good. It's like that was your best chance to get into. If you wait till like end of November, December, good luck.
Got some pretty stiff competition. Yeah,
good luck. Gun season, guys killing some real big deer, both on public and private. I don't know if they did that. I wonder if GON's like this. Did Alabama have, was it, they ever have a public section and a private section of it, as in like that competition?
I don't think so.
See, that would be kind of cool. Like they had two different categories and it was a head-to-head competition between the public land dude and private land guy. Like it was a bracket system. Like each week, biggest one killed on public, biggest one killed on private. It worked its way down in the final two. One was on public, one was on private. Let's see who's the best shooter. That I'd pay to watch that.
Yeah, I'd talk to the folks at GON.
That'd be sweet.
See what their thoughts are.
That'd be sweet. So anyway.
The idea, man. Normally this is where we do Q&As, but we had a whole bunch of y'all write in, not with Q&A submissions, but with career suggestions, which we appreciate. We were looking for that. We've got a big old fat list of career suggestions now. Again, we are going to do something with that here in the near future. Just about, you know, what jobs out there, if you're looking to maybe change careers, or maybe you're a younger guy or girl and you're trying to figure out what you want to go into after high school or after college, career paths that are going to afford you the time to be able to go and hunt. So we're gonna do something with that soon. But we got a whole bunch of those. Not a lot of Q&As.
Hey, did of all this career paths, did unemployment get submitted?
Dude, me getting on food stamps.
Getting that check, baby, coming in. Listen, dude, I knew some people during COVID, and they took that unemployment check, and they were out killing some turkeys. So, I'm like, I don't know if that got submitted, but that's one.
Dang. I bet we're going to have someone write in.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. Using the system, baby.
Yep.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, I'm excited for us to cover that. But yeah, what would be super, what we'd really appreciate everyone out there, whether you're watching the podcast or listening to the podcast, is go submit a Q&A. Again, down the show note below in the audio version of the podcast or the video version, there's a link down there, or you can go over to thesoutherNOutdoorsmen.com, and there's a tab on the website, Q&A form. Again, submit your question, and we'll answer it on these Thursday episodes. Love to get some new ones. Kind of maybe think about your questions, especially from like a time standpoint. Like, you know, what would y'all want to get answered this summer, and then also kind of get an early bow season into the fall, and we'll kind of work through those as they come in. So, you know, please feel free to, you know, submit some questions and kind of work on through them. Or also, you can also think about this. When you submit a question, you can also submit it with the mindset of maybe one of our past guests answering it, and me and Andrew can reach out to whoever that past guest is, give them the question, and then answer that on the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. Well, we're going to cut this one a little bit short because we got to gear up for our interview that we're about to do. Yep. So, and we don't have any Q&As. So, yep. Guys, write in Q&As.
Appreciate everybody's leaving us 5-star written reviews as well on Apple Podcasts and 5-star reviews on Spotify as well. Super helpful for the podcast. Y'all been writing in some great ones. Really appreciate it. Again, feel free. If you enjoy the show, go leave us. Takes 2 seconds. Go leave us a 5-star review. And if you got a little bit more time, maybe 30 seconds, leave us a 5-star written review on Apple Podcasts. Really does help us with the podcast. And also, another big thing you can do, share the show. Share the YouTube video, you know, version of the podcast. Share the audio feed. And continue to, like, help us continue to make an impact on maybe one of your friends having a better season this year. Maybe they pick up something from one of these guests that they can go out there and maybe become a listener success story. Implement something that they learned and go have maybe their best season ever. So, appreciate y'all watching the podcast. Appreciate y'all listening to the podcast. And we'll catch you back here on the next episode of the Southern Outdoors Podcast. And remember, guys, y'all stay safe.
All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody.
whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find basher groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code SOUTHERN10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.